The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt in Atlanta at the annual meeting of the American Legislative Exchange Council, the gathering of smart state legislators from across the United States. Go to alec.org. If the last 3 days have intrigued you, including today, and you want to try and figure out where you're going to move to, where you recommend your kids move to, go get the Rich State, Poor State report from Alec, A-L-E-C, USteelersFans.org, A-L-E-C.org, and just peruse. Where if you're going to build your life, you know, if you're 18 years old and just got out of high school and you're going to go to work somewhere, or you're 22 years old, and you're going to go find a job in college, or 23, you've been screwing around, you're just going to go somewhere and build a life, read Rich States, Poor States, and find out we've got the best schools, the lowest taxes, the most innovation, and you'd be amazed. That's the place to start. The news this morning, Washington Post reporting that major changes to the Affordable Care Act, biggest subsidies, more giveaway money, in the reconciliation bill, the largest tax hike on corporations in decades, quote, the largest tax hike on corporations in decades, and dozens of lesser known provisions that will affect millions of Americans. This coming the day after the U.S. economy officially contracted by 0.9%, two successive quarters of contraction. Now, I know there are a few economists, including those that I like Brian Westbury, says this isn't a recession. Well, it feels like a recession and people are acting like it. The only good news yesterday is the Congress did, in fact, pass the CHIPS and Science Act. Members of the House voted 243 to 187, $52 billion in subsidies for U.S. chip manufacturers, more than $100 billion in technology and science investments. That latter thing that can go wrong, it's the former thing that's smart. Micron.com is a big sponsor of this show. They have been battling for chips for a long time. They did not battle for the National Science Foundation money, but like everyone, we need clean air, clean water, good food, and semiconductor chips. And we got to build them here because we can't rely on China not invading Taiwan. Indeed, more on that later today. The noises that President Biden listened to President Xi yesterday for 2 hours. I'm pretty sure the president just sat there and didn't say much. They'll never release the video of that call. It must have been pretty awful. The Telegraph in Great Britain announced today that the National Health Service there could be banned from giving puberty blockers to children, as concerns are rising that youngsters are being rushed into changing their gender. Liz Truss, who has all but locked this thing up, she's going to be the next prime minister, and Rishi Sunak, who's the dark horse at this point, and I mean, way back, he's lame. He's absolutely, because he came out for the keeping the taxes and keeping the Green New Deal and all that nonsense that Liz Truss is going to get rid of. They both said that life-altering treatments have to be given only when children are old enough. That would mean 18, usually, for things like tattoos. Rishi Sunak said Monday night he was the guy who stabbed Boris Johnson in the back that he was accused of being the guy who stabbed Boris Johnson in the back. Chinese leader Xi Jinping warned U.S. President Joe Biden that he is, quote, playing with fire over Taiwan. 2 hours of that being browbeaten. I mentioned to you the economy. The Wall Street Journal, the U.S. economy shrank for a second quarter in a row, a common definition of recession, as the housing market buckled under interest rates and high inflation, took the steam out of business and consumer spending. Gross domestic product fell at an inflation and seasonally adjusted rate of 0.9%, negative almost percent. That followed a negative 1.6%. So the first 6 months of this year, we're down 2.5% in the economy after spending $7, $8 trillion over 3 years. The sugar high is wearing off. New York Times reports that the climate and tax deal announced by Senate Democrats would pump hundreds of billions of dollars into programs designed to speed the country's transition away from an economy based largely on fossil fuels. Okay, did you get that? Billions and billions and billions of dollars for electric vehicles. They're going to do a tax credit for electric vehicles, which is going to send the price of electric vehicles up because it's free money. It's going to screw up the used car market again. It's going to screw up everything again. It's way down from Build Back Better, but it's still a nightmare, still another inflationary nightmare. And it's hard for me to believe. It really is hard for me to believe that they did this. I want to play for you Justice Alito abroad talking about European reaction to the Dobbs decision. Can we play cut number one of Justice Alito yesterday?
A few weeks since I had the honor this term of writing, I think, the only Supreme Court decision in the history of that institution that has been lambasted by a whole string of foreign leaders who felt perfectly fine commenting on American law. One of these was former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, but he paid the price. Post hoc ergo propter hoc, right?
All right, so that's a joke. And don't take it as anything other than a joke, because, of course, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson is still the Prime Minister. But Justice Alito is gracefully telling non-Americans that they don't get to make Supreme Court law. The United States Constitution dictates what Supreme Court law is. And even if they made a mistake 49 years ago with Roe and doubled down on that mistake 30 years ago in Casey, now the court has it right. It is up to the state. Coming right back, America, we've got Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy up next on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt live from Atlanta at the ALEC Conference, American Legislative Exchange Council. Brian Harrison is making me feel old. He's 40 years old. He's had more jobs than anyone should have had at 40, including senior positions in the Trump and Bush administration. We have many common friends that we're just playing old home week. But he's back in Texas representing the 10th District, which is close to cowboy country. It is cowboy country, isn't it?
Just a hair south. That's right.
The Dallas Cowboys. We're not going to talk football with you because I still hate him from Brian, from Bob Hayes. Brian Harrison, education has been front and center at ALEC all week. And I think it is a historic opportunity for the Republican Party to seize the initiative to free students from bad public schools or to give them the money that would follow them anywhere and reinforce good public schools. So what's the situation in Texas? Are you going to do the Arizona or are you going to do an ESA? What's on the table?
No, it's an incredibly important issue and one that I care passionately about. I'm actually the father of four young kids myself. I've got an 8-year-old boy, 6-year-old boy, 4-year-old boy, and a 2-year-old daughter, and they are in public schools.
That girl's going to be ready to handle anything.
She is going to be just fine. She's got the strongest personality of the four.
Of course.
They attend public schools because I happen to live in a district that does have some great public school options, but not every Texan does. And if the last 2 years of COVID have taught us anything, it's that the educational establishment and the liberal teachers unions do not have the interest of kids at heart. They care far more about indoctrinating the next generation than they do about educating them. And in Texas, we have a problem. I mean, I think only 35% statewide of Texas students are performing at proficiency levels when it comes to mathematics.
And that what percent?
I think it's around 35%. I'll fact check this for you. But that shouldn't be terribly surprising when you think about how monopolists behave. And absent school choice programs, which Texas, sadly, as a freedom-loving state, does not have, competition has not been allowed to do its job. So it shouldn't maybe be too surprising that liberal ISDs like those in Austin, Texas, are able to spend money on highly sexualized drag queen performances for second-grade students at taxpayer expense. They're able to spend money on drag queens instead of more math tutors because they don't have competition that school choice programs would enable. And I think it would, for the first time, incentivize all these schools to focus on the one thing that should matter, and that's educating kids and making sure that every child or adult, when they walk across that stage and get a diploma at the age of 18, can provide for themselves and provide for a family. And you know what? It was one of the biggest issues in my race. Texas has had a problem. I've got a rural district, and for a long time, the rural parts of the state are concerned about this because the educational establishment has terrified rural Republicans into believing it's going to destroy their schools. But I would say the most pro-public school position you can possibly have is to support school choice. I got elected on the issue, and I look forward to, with reckless abandon, focusing on empowering parents through school choice in the next legislative session coming up.
Yeah, Representative Harrison, I, like every other person who listens to the Hugh Hewitt Show, love Friday Night Lights, right? So high schools are a big deal in Texas. I don't know if you grew up there. Did you grow up
there? I did, yes, sir. Native Texan.
And did you go to high school in Texas?
I sure did.
Which one?
Ovilla Christian School. It's a tiny little school south of Dallas. Graduated with 32 kids. I think we were developing a flag football team at the time. It was not big enough.
But I can imagine that people who are attached to their football clubs in McAllen or
100%.
That they don't want to mess with that, but this doesn't mess with that, right?
If
you do backpack funding, the funding follows the student. They can stay at the high schools that bring their performance up. And if they can hang on to that, their students will go somewhere where they can play football and get a good education at the same time.
The only reason, the argument that you'll often hear is, oh, this will defund public schools. The only public schools that would lose any money whatsoever would be schools that are failing students and parents choose to put them somewhere else where their kids can get a better education and have a better life. I mean, this is the sad state of affairs. There is so much elitism that permeates the opposition to the school choice movement. They say, oh, you're just going to help, you know, subsidize rich families or whatever. Rich kids in affluent families have school choice today because their parents can afford to send them wherever they want to go to. And I'll never forget during the height of COVID, this picture went a little bit viral on social media. It was two poor kids, obviously from a poor neighborhood, sitting on a curb in front of a Taco Bell with their iPads because they didn't have Wi-Fi at home and their schools were shut down. And that was the only place they could get any kind of internet. And then the idea, first of all, that you hand seven-year-olds an iPad Pro and say, look at this for 8 hours and you'll be educated, is farcical. But families who had children in private schools didn't have to go through that.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Some public schools stayed open, and God bless them. But right now, masks are coming back in San Diego Unified Schools, in Minneapolis schools, in Washington, D.C. is considering them as the education bureaucracy, for whatever reason, wants to make it harder for kids to learn, even though the Omicron B5A10, whatever it is not hurting children any more than Delta did, any more than the original did. Brian, in terms of moving something, though, a lot of Alec's time this week has been spent on this, and you got big breakthroughs like Arizona.
Yep.
That's complete. They're being sued by the teachers union. You got a very aggressive platform run in Florida. West Virginia is doing a lot. Ohio's on the brink of passing a backpack bill. Are you 1 year away, 2 years away, 5 years away from persuading the public?
I love that all those states are enacting these massive parental empowerment programs. And because, A, it's empowering the families in those states. But what it's also doing, it's sending a signal to states like Texas that for far too long have been dragging our feet on empowering parents with educational freedom. And we're able to point across the country. I think it's between 20 and 30 states now have enacted these programs. Arizona is lapping the field as far as I'm concerned. And we have 30 million Texans. They deserve this. I think the time is now. If we can't capitalize on it, and I say this with a little bit of humility, the teachers' unions and the educational establishment in the last 2 years of COVID have done more for the cause of parental empowerment and educational freedom than the proponents of school choice have for the last 20 years.
And whenever anyone acts that proprietary towards anything, you know that they have. I like what you say. It's how monopolies act. I have tweeted out, if people go to my Twitter feed, they will find an article by Leah Beebe, who's with us here, about the radicalization of social studies and how the curriculum across the country has become absolutely, if not overtly anti-American, America skeptical.
Yeah.
And I mean, that doesn't fly in Texas, does it?
No, we need to start focusing more. And again, competition would allow us to do this because we would focus on educational outcomes. We have to be focusing on traditional core education, reading, writing, arithmetic, history, economics, and less on the indoctrination and telling kids you're like either an oppressor or oppressed based on the color of your skin. And the fact that these educational systems are able to do that, again, they don't have competition. It's far past time that states like Texas do. We're proud in Texas of liberty and freedom and state sovereignty, and yet we do not allow parents to have the freedom on the one thing that is the most important thing in their lives. I agree with conservative leaders like Ted Cruz that school choice is the civil rights issue of our era.
You know, a couple of Texans, 41 and 43. There's been no better man than H.W. being president, and W. ran to become the education president. 9/11 got in the way, and he had to keep the country safe.
Yep.
Jeb, of course, did education reform in Florida, kind of got the ball rolling. Texas should be fertile ground for this. Now, do you have some Republicans that need to be persuaded, or is it all just Democrats standing in the room?
No. I am optimistic that we can get it done this session. It's traditionally been not so much a Republican-Democrat split in Texas as it has been an urban-rural split. But I really think parents have had their eyes open. For 2 years, they got to watch either online, remote, or because they were home and able to help their kids with their assignments. They were seeing what was going on in the classroom. So as opposed to all the special interests, the taxpayer-funded lobbying organizations that have controlled this and ensured the educational monopoly didn't get broken up, there is a new special interest in town, and they're called parents.
Now, Brian Harrison, the state rep for Texas 10th District in the State House, I believe they had school board elections in Texas in the past year, and I believe that a bunch of incumbents got booted.
Yep.
And I am urging everyone to toss out every incumbent at every school board unless you're absolutely rock solid certain that they are for reform. Like my buddy, Dr. Ken Williams in Orange County, he's rock solid conservative for reform. What is going to be the consequence of those school board changes? They firing superintendents? Can they? Do superintendents have tenure? Because you got to change superintendent. You want woke to be broke. You got to get rid of the people who brought in the dope.
Well, especially when you got some of these superintendents making, I think, close to or over $400,000 a year. But no, federal officials and state officials get all the attention. But I argue all the time when I'm out speaking, the most important elections are your city and your school board elections, because those are the epicenter of the battleground for the future of the next generation. And so you're starting to see parents pay more attention to this. And especially after the National Association of School Boards went after, in collusion with the Biden administration, to try and weaponize the federal law enforcement against parents who had done nothing more than had the audacity to show up and speak out against liberal CRT and COVID mandates that were permeating their schools. We finally saw the Texas Association of School Boards joined, I think, most of the rest of the other ones and finally pulled out. But we parents have and are going to, I think, continue being much more involved in these local elections, and I think it's absolutely critical for the next generation.
Now, I interviewed Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to do it again in a couple more weeks. And the topic is all education all the time. And his Secretary Guidara was here yesterday. The rule that Youngkin has is we will not teach divisive subjects to young children. And that means we're not teaching human sexuality. We're not teaching race. We're not doing any of this sort of stuff. Does Texas have a curriculum review underway to get the woke out of the schools?
We're focusing on this. The legislature, before I was sworn in, banned CRT, but we are hearing reports all across the state of it creeping up through other means, less overt means, and so we're going to continue to tackle that problem. But I will tell you, Hugh, and maybe you have, I'd love to hear thoughts you may have on this, but I do not understand the liberal teachers' unions and some of the in the professional educational establishment's fixation, almost obsession, with talking about highly sexual material with second and third graders that don't belong to them.
It's a 90-10 issue. I mean, just like boys participating in girls' sports because they're having a gender dysphoria. 90% of the people think that's not a good idea. We care for and are compassionate towards children who are troubled and making some kind of emotional journey. But that small group of people cannot turn upside down the rest. And so what I understand is on 90-10 issues, when I heard former President Trump and former Vice President Pence on the same day make the same appeal to save girls' sports, I know it's a winner.
And we banned that. It was right after I was sworn in. I think it was the first bill that I co-authored in the Texas legislature. And we actually outlawed boys competing with girls' sports, at least through the 12th grade. And I think we're going to look to actually expand that into college next year in the state of Texas.
And what kind of pushback? The teachers' unions? Because I don't think teachers want this either. It just adds additional conflict to their classrooms. They don't want to do it. But that 10% is very loud and very angry.
They're very loud. And I think there's a big distinction between when we talk about teachers, talking about teachers themselves and the teachers' unions, because most teachers in Texas are great people who are actually conservatives themselves. But the teachers' unions, including in the state of Texas, have had far too much power for far too long. And I look forward to continuing to degrade their influence in the state of Texas.
So, Brian, with four young children,
yes,
you've
sir.
Got to have schools that work, right? I've got five grandchildren now. My kids all went to public school in California, a great public school, terrific. I don't know what they're like now, but I do worry about Virginia schools, because where all my grandchildren live. You got four. The three boys and the girl.
Yeah.
Do you hope that they can go to public school?
I hope that every public school in the state of Texas performs at a level that every parent who wants to send their kids there can send their kids there and have the full confidence that at the age of 18, they will have marketable skills to provide for them and for their families. I send my kids to public school. I am pro public schools. School choice is not a threat to public schools. And in fact, letting competition work in the marketplace, it would finally do in education what it does in every other sector the government hasn't corrupted. And that over time, quality should be going up and cost should be going down. But because government has a monopoly in education, K-12 in this country, especially in the state of Texas, we're having the exact opposite, where quality is continually going down. Price, it's becoming more costly per pupil. And then I would add on another layer, because they're able to behave as monopolists, they're inserting liberal, extreme, woke indoctrination into these children. The left targeted education strategically over a generation ago because they know if they can capture those folks that within inside of a generation, they can turn some of the, including the most fundamental principles that we hold dear as Americans and Texans on their heads, and unfortunately, they've been succeeding. It's time for that to stop.
Texas State Representative Brian Harrison, great to meet you. Good luck. Keep keeping us posted on things going on in the great state of Texas. Thank you for joining me. I'll be right back, America, from Atlanta. The ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council meeting, rolls on, ALEC.org. Go get Rich State, Poor State, and follow their education reform page, ALEC.org. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt from the ALEC Conference, American Legislative Exchange Council. I hold in my hand the report that you can get from ALEC.org, Rich State, Poor States, although there's an error in it. It's Ohio is not number one in both economic performance and economic outlook. So this must be an error. I will ask Jonathan Williams now, who is the executive vice president, lead economist at ALEC. Why did you guys hate Ohio?
You know, I'm a Michigan native.
See, that's what I knew. I knew it was in there. But I said earlier in the program, people ought to get this before they make up their decision. When they come out of college, when they come out of high school, when they're deciding to move somewhere after they've been to D.C., they ought to read Rich State, Poor State, because it gives them a quick overview about where the future is.
Yeah, and it gives them a great overview of how to keep more of their own money over the course of their career. Because, I mean, we're talking adding up over the hundreds of thousands of dollars over someone's career. Let's say if you choose no income tax, Texas or Florida or Tennessee versus New York or California. It's a big deal.
It's probably millions of dollars if you take that which you save and you invest it on dollar cost. Now, I'm glad they sent the economist back. I know you're the executive vice president of ALEC.org, Jonathan. But yesterday, we got a 0.9 contraction in the economy after 1.4% negative. Now, our friend Westbury says that's not a recession because of a variety. It's a sort of he's a conservative, but he's a free market guy. So it's not really a recession. I think it's a recession. It feels like a recession. What do you think?
Well, I like Brian a lot, too. He's a great economist. But I think the Uber driver I talked to that you and I talked about earlier this week, he was right. He feels it. And whether the technical definition from NBER comes in that way in a few months or not, I think the old line of economist jokes is, may you know you're coming out of a recession before you're in one. So maybe we have turned the corner by the time NBER makes up their mind. But I think people feel it, certainly.
Now, let me ask you why companies like Apple and Amazon went backwards a little bit and their stock surged. Well, yes, is it because they are expected to survive stagflation best? That was my layman's guess, is that these companies must best be positioned against the economy no matter what shape it's in.
Yeah, you're probably right. There's a lot of movement on those kind of things day to day. But, you know, one of the things I'm very worried about, of course, is this new deal that was just announced a couple of days ago since the last time we talked. That includes a minimum 15% business tax rate. So taking away the ability of people to use legal tax provisions to reduce their effective tax rate. Plus, I mean, Janet Yellen's goal, of course, is to make this a worldwide minimum. So to take away tax competition, probably the best thing those of us who believe in free markets have going for us is that states and nations have to compete with each other.
They have to compete. I made this argument 2 weeks ago, is that capital is fluid, capital moves. Capital will go wherever the tax rate is lowest, and not everyone's going to buy the 15%. So we're going to see some people go abroad. And I just wonder, do you have to redo Rich States, Poor States? Because I don't know how the 15% overlay is going to impact the states. Do they have trade-offs? Do they have deductions? How does it work?
Well, that's a very good point. I think it's federally focused. But, you know, given this administration and given their war on states and on federalism, maybe we shouldn't give them any ideas to say states need to set minimum tax rates. That's something that's worried me for many, many years, whether it's sales taxes or income taxes or any kind of state tax policy. And you remember, it wasn't far-fetched or very long ago that Janet Yellen in the Biden Treasury was saying if you took the federal bailout money for the states, that you couldn't cut taxes back home. So the federal government should be watched very carefully with any kind of these provisions, saying states must or must not do anything with their own tax policy.
We saw Boeing walk from Illinois and move to Virginia. We saw Lego build in Virginia. The big corporations are like small individuals. They know they've got to go where their shareholders get the best return. You've been here for all week. ALEC is wrapping up today, ALEC.org. What is focus of these legislators? You're the executive vice president, so you want to talk about economics. Are they talking about that or education? Or are they talking about ESG? What are they talking about?
I think it's those items. It's really the three E's. It's energy and the economy and education. We had a great session with former Secretary Betsy DeVos yesterday. Virginia Secretary, as you know, I think you had Amy Gadara. She was fantastic on the show, talking about just this moment in time for us to really empower kids and empower their families to make decisions about their own education, contrary to Terry McCarthy. Call-off's idea.
Well, John, how long have you been without it?
15 years now.
Okay, so rate this energy level or this innovation level among your members compared to over those 15 years? Where are we on the bell curve? Really high innovation, exploration, and revolutionary adaptation are in the middle or at the low end?
I think we're on the high end, and I think it's a direct result to the pushback in the Biden administration and everything they're doing on big government policies in D.C. The four states that have done a flat tax this year alone, it took 110 years to get the four flat tax states. Now we're at eight, and of course, of 10 weeks, we doubled that number this year. And then, of course, Arizona, its huge school choice win. I mean, it's been a remarkable year for free market policy in the states.
Where are
states
going to compete next? Estate taxes vary dramatically between. I mean, if you're in Washington state and you die, you're screwed. Have they begun to look into that? Have you begun to look into estate taxes at the state level yet?
Absolutely. It's one of the factors in rich states, poor states, and how we measure the states and rank them 1 to 50, because we've had so many stories over the years, New England states, for instance, and others that are learning the hard way that people do vote with their feet. And of course, towards the end of their years, if they've built a nest egg that they'd like to pass to their kids, their grandkids,
they don't want to give it to the state. You get out of California, get out of wherever it is. So, Jonathan, I want to thank you. Keep Alec going. Are you in Virginia as well?
We are.
I will see you around Northern Virginia. Jonathan Williams, the Executive Vice President of Alec, and he's an economist. Doing a wrap-up on an amazing week at Alec. One more hour from Alec, then Dr. Larry Arndt is my guest in Hour 3 as we return to the ethics, because, of course, last radio hour of the week is always the Hillsdale Dialogue. Jonathan, do you have a Twitter handle?
At Tax Economist.
At Tax Economist?
How about that?
How did you get that?
I got it early.
At Tax Economist. Thank you, Jonathan. I'll be right back. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show coming up. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I hold in my hand rich states, poor states. And my idea of the day is from the ALEC conference, American Legislative Exchange Council. .org conference, is that we give a copy of this to every single graduating high school student, every single graduating college student, and their parents to know where they want to retire and where they want to go to build a life. Because except for the air about Ohio, which not high enough, I do note number 50. People will be surprised. The 50th, the worst state in terms of rich, poor, and competitiveness is Connecticut. Now, my friend Carol Platt Liebau runs the Yankee Institute. Lee Schalk is one of the policy wonks who runs ALEC. And I'll bet you that Carol Platt Liebau thanks you for this, Lee, because honesty is the best medicine for governments.
It really is. And we hope that through this publication, we can provide a lot of great information for both leaders, but also their constituents to really light that fire and help them get taxes and spending under control at the state level.
Now, Lee Schalk, you're the vice president for policy. The most interesting policy discussion, there's a lot going on at ALEC, to me, is education reform. And Arizona blew open the dam. They basically destroyed the Grand Coulee Dam of public education teachers unions by making backpack funding. The taxpayer dollars per student follow the students to wherever they go to school. How many other states are going to follow that lead?
Well, we've had a lot of great conversations this week. I know Iowa seems to be on the cusp of following suit very soon. You know, Arizona, they took what West Virginia did very recently and took it a step further and made sure that every single student in the state is eligible. You know, Hugh, these kids that are in failing schools, they're not getting any younger. They're growing up quickly. They're suffering. They're not getting the right education. And you don't want to mess with their parents, those mothers that are so concerned about the well-being and the futures of their children. They want these types of reforms right now.
Oh, believe me, I got an earful because I have five grandkids in Virginia, four of whom are my daughter's kids. And I get an earful every time something screwy goes on. I told Glenn Youngkin about it. I talked to the Secretary Guidara yesterday about it. What I hear from her is not what I had to deal with when they were in public school in California. It was a sort of a golden era. The collapse of COVID or the collapse of the wall obscuring what's going on in public schools has opened up the opportunity. What kind of support do you provide state legislators who are not here, but who want to learn about Arizona, West Virginia, Iowa? Think about that. Arizona, West Virginia, Iowa, three more disparate states you cannot imagine in terms of climate growth, future, past. Arizona, West Virginia, Iowa all did school reform, and Florida has been doing it for a long time, and California is reactionary.
That's right. And it's not just the educational opportunity bills that we're seeing, but at ALEC this week, we're talking a lot about academic transparency. So something you mentioned, this really came into the focus during the pandemic. All of a sudden, parents were able to peer into the classroom, those Zoom meetings, see what was being taught. And I think it's so important right now that parents are able to know what is in the curriculum, what's being taught to our children.
You are a Demon Deacon, a Wake Forest grad, so you don't know anything about college football, obviously. But our friend who's coming up next, Tarzan Joe, also a Demon Deacon. But you came out of a great public or private Christian high school in Charlotte, right?
That's right.
And then you are doing vice president for policy at ALEC. What is your day like? I know there are vice presidents of policy all over the place. The one at the Chamber of Commerce obviously doesn't do much. But what do you do?
Well, when we're not in state capitals doing issue briefings and talking about rich states, poor states, customizing these presentations for state lawmakers, you know, we're back in the nation's capital, taking phone calls from our friends across the country, doing things like op-eds, talking to great people like you, Hugh, on the radio, and really spreading our message, which is free markets, limited government, and federalism. That's the path to prosperity.
Free markets, free minds. And when does rich pay poor states come out? I mean, when is this hot off the presses?
Yeah, so this is our latest print edition that you've gotten your hands. We have our latest rankings at richstatespoorstates.org. You can see them for all 50 states. But every year on Tax Day, believe it or not, that's the day that we release the new rankings, where you can see how your state has moved up or down in terms of economic opportunity and outlook.
This is the first election since the president became the president, the first election since COVID unveiled the inner workings of the public schools. What do you expect to see in the state legislative races? I think they're all talking about education, and they're all also talking about gas prices.
Well, we talked today. There was a great session where we were talking about issues that matter to suburban Americans. And I know that more than 50% of Americans would say we live in a suburban area. Those issues are American issues: energy, public safety, education, and the economy. But I think you're going to continue to see these issues play a huge role in November. We know in Virginia, it played a huge role in Glenn Youngkin's race and him winning the governor's mansion there in Richmond. So I believe we'll see more of that in the coming months.
Nancy Pelosi tried to pass a police funding bill to blunt their decided disadvantage at the polls on that, and her party wouldn't do it. I mean, they won't vote for police funding. I just am curious. Education and ESG and taxes. Have people been talking about crime this week?
They have. There have been some really good conversations about that. But I think too many times state legislators feel like their hands are tied. They're looking for answers. They're looking for solutions. And so it's been a great week of sharing best practices and ideas and learning from one another, learning from legislators from other states that have been successful. That's the beauty of ALEC. We can come together and see what's working and what's not across the country.
Now, let me tell you an anecdote. I want your response to this. I got invited to speak at Chautauquans for Balance, the group at Chautauqua, the famed New York mothership of Chautauqua movement back in the 1870s or something like that. And that generations pass those cottages down. People go there for 4 or 5 months at a time. And they pass them generation to generation, except now property taxes are destroying their ability. Their vacation home costs more in property taxes than their tax bill does, even in a tax state like California, which has Prop 13. How many property tax crises are ahead of us as states scramble to find money somewhere?
Well, property taxes, when we do polling and we ask people, you know, looking at the different types of taxes, what do you hate the most? It might not surprise you. It's always property taxes.
And what do they mind the least? Is it sales taxes?
Sales taxes, I think, you know, they don't often understand or not understand. They may not even see that they're paying a sales tax day to day. They're used to it. But when that big property tax bill comes in the mail, I mean, it's often just a whopper, and it really hits them hard. And they see it going up year after year. That's the problem. You've got people in New Jersey that have lived there for decades. They've got to leave the state. They can't even afford to stay in their homes anymore. You know, once they're retired, they don't have that income coming in. And yet the state government and the local governments are continuing to raise their property taxes. That's another solution that we've talked about this week. You look at a place like Kansas, who passed a truth in taxation law for property taxes about a year and a half ago. Truth in taxation says if a local taxing entity is going to collect one additional dollar in property taxes from you compared to what they collected the previous year, they've got to send you a postcard in the mail and say, we're about to have a public vote and a public hearing on increasing your property taxes. You can come out, you can testify, and then your local elected officials have to take a recorded vote. And the early results are amazing.
Growing up in Ohio, they used to say, no one understood what the heck it meant. We're going to have a 5 mil increase on your property debt. 5 mil. What? 5 mil? What's a mil? And, you know, it turns out they could have said, we're going up 5 cents on your property taxes. They could have said, you know, 100 mil, whatever. It could have been a buck on you. They could have been disclosing, but they weren't. So taxing authorities are going to hate tax transparency.
Well, and to your point, they can hide behind these assessment-driven property tax bills. They could say, I didn't raise your taxes, or I even lowered your taxes. Maybe the rate went down, but assessments are going up. And so you pay a higher dollar amount year after year. Truth in taxation changes that. I think that's the beauty of it. It just adds transparency. That's so key. We talk about transparency in education. It's so important across policy ideas.
Now that information is widely and easily available via the web, people can check on this stuff. I think school board members are going to get tossed out left and right because of what they've seen. But in terms of the model, Alec does model legislation on many things. Do you have model legislation on controlling property taxes?
We do, actually. Truth in taxation, the policy I was just talking about, it is an Alec model policy. And it's an idea. I mentioned Kansas, but it's an idea that Utah, number one in rich states, poor states, take a look, see what they've done and why they're number one. But one of the reasons is they've been able to keep their property tax burdens in check. They've had this law, Truth in Taxation, in place since 1985, and it's made a huge difference for them.
Now, let me ask you, Lee, and we got 1 minute. People have in their minds an idea of who's a rich state and who's a poor state, and they usually dump on Mississippi or Louisiana, and that's not true. And then they don't know about Utah, and they don't know. The more you educate people about, you see the transit, you see people moving all over the country. Are they moving in response to the underlying, you know, I think they ought to read rich state, poor states, but are they moving in response to fundamental economics?
Our research says yes. Over the last 15 years of this report, we've seen that people moving to states with lower or no income taxes. Those states are not only seeing population growth, but wage growth for the citizens.
Lee Schalk, Vice President for Policy at American Legislative Exchange Council. Go to alec.org if you want to get this. Rich state, poor states. Come right back. We continue on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America, from alec.org. I'm in Atlanta, but I do not forget to talk to Tarzana Joe, Poet Laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. I have just one observation this morning. I've put it in a lot of stanzas, but it's just one observation. We love to hear the happy talk. I say without a doubt, when the news is negative, I tend to tune it out. Conversely, or inversely, so my point is crystal clear, I only pay attention to the things I want to hear. When facts are put before me about money or relations, I filter them a little till they fit my expectations. If someone I support is clearly having a bad day, I find my inclination is to look the other way. And friends, I'm not the only one whose reason I'm assailing. This dangerous phenomenon is quite the human failing. So it isn't that surprising that our legislative leaders come up short like I do in their roles as tea leaf readers. The Democrats are certain the economy is expanding, and all the gloomy numbers are a shared misunderstanding. Republicans, compatibly, won't look beyond the news and think if they do nothing, it's a cinch that they won't lose. Parties are like people. That's what I've concluded. And like us, they are equally and easily deluded. Lib or libertarian, Ghibelline or Guelph, the worst lies on the planet are the ones you tell yourself. That's What Recession by Tarzana Joe.
Ghibelline or Guelph?
Come on, you're not a student of Florentine democracy, aren't you?
Guelphs? What are you going to do to the Steelers fans?
This is right before the Larry Arn. I figure a little,
Yeah, but Guelph is really reaching. The Steelers fans are scratching their helmets and saying, I haven't heard of a Guelph, and I can't even say the first one. Tarzana Joe, though.
Wait. I was a registered Guelph when I first began to vote, so that's, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah, there'll never be a recession in poetry so long as you're open for business and your website hasn't been hacked. Is it reopened?
I am clean as a whistle. That's great.
I'm not believing that.
Ask for a poem, see what happens.
Yeah, go to TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Email him if you want a poem. Don't try and put the order in over at TarzanaJoe.com. If you want the order to get received, like I got it at the Varsity 2 days ago, go to TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
This is a red alert for hardworking Americans who are tired of seeing their freedoms and savings threatened by the globalist agenda. Wealth Protection Research is on a mission to find whistleblowers who are exposing the schemes that threaten your financial security. We're talking about real, patriotic financial warriors like Jim Rickards and Porter Stansberry. They're not afraid to tell it like it is, exposing how the system is rigged against you. Text IDEAS to 76626 to find out more. With the 2024 election storming our way, your IRA and your 401k appear to be in the crosshairs. That's why we've compiled our three favorite ideas from freethinkers. Don't wait for a knock on your door telling you it's too late. Get this critical report. Text IDEAS to 76626. The fight for your financial freedom is on. Text IDEAS to 76626 now for your free report. That's IDEAS to 76626. Standard text and data rates may apply.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt broadcasting today from the ALEC.org convention. The American Legislative Exchange Council gathers in Atlanta. They have sponsored my visit down here because I'm a policy wonk and I love doing this. And I run into old friends as well. I haven't seen Scott Rasmussen since, I don't know, I think the GOP convention in Minneapolis in 2008. It's been a long time, Scott, but it's good to see you again in person. You are no longer with Rasmussen Reports. You were smart. You sold that. I'm not sure if they're as good as they were when you were there, but you're not with RMG Research, and you're still diving into what people think, and you're doing the breakfast talk this morning. Now, the breakfast talk, you don't want doom and gloom. You don't want, like, the undertakers to come and measure the casket. So what are you going to tell these people?
Well, what I'm going to say is that when I look at all the data, and I look at as much as anybody in this world, I am firmly convinced that America's best days are still to come. Things are difficult right now. It's a very bad time in America. I am old enough to remember a period in the late 60s and early 70s when we also...
You and me both.
Yes, when we also thought things were going really poorly. But I see lots of signs. The American people are looking at things a little bit differently, and where the voters lead, eventually the political class will follow.
Now, Scott, going back to those days in the 70s, in the middle of the Carter years, a young woman took over the leadership of the Conservative Party by the name of Margaret Thatcher in 1976. 3 years later, about 20 months before Ronald Reagan was elected, she took over the parliament, and she went through some tough times and came out on the other side of her economic reforms and the Falklands War, and Britain went into a golden era. I think the same thing is happening right now with Liz Truss. I believe Liz Truss is going to win handily. Rishi got caught saying taxes, 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 and more taxes. And so Liz Truss is saying, no, I'm Thatcher 2.0. Does that tell us anything? Does Great Britain's future tell us anything in the United States?
You know, it's always nice to make those comparisons, especially when they tell you what you want to hear. But I'm not sure they really correlate that precisely. There are things going on in the world, and there is going to be a revival of free market attitudes. So, again, we see it among voters. There's going to be a pushback against a lot of what we're seeing. So some of that in Great Britain may be happening here. I think the greater comparison is in 1976, the Democrats should have won a blowout. We were dealing with the Arab oil embargo and inflation, and Gerald Ford had his whip inflation.
The pardons. Buttons.
Yeah, and the pardon, everything else going on, and yet Carter barely won. There wasn't much change in the House or the Senate. We saw the same thing in 2020. 40 million people were thrown out of work. Donald Trump shouldn't have been competitive in that race, and it turned out to be very, very close. And the Carter years were a transition to something, and I think the Biden years are too.
Well, let's talk now about what Alec wants to talk about, education, energy, and the economy, meaning taxes. Let's start with education. I think it's the iceberg issue. I think Democrats are running aground on this iceberg everywhere. Parents saw what is going on or not going on. They do not like radical ideology. As Governor Youngkin told me, I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to do so in a couple more weeks. Because he's the education governor, and he said, we're just not going to teach divisive subjects. We do not want to do that. I think it's a very good way to craft the message.
Yes, what you want to craft the message on is parents need to be the primary force, not the only force, but the primary force in deciding what their children learn and talking about the way and the topics they're being taught. Now, when I look at polling, the most significant thing, and this is a good example of why I'm optimistic, the most significant thing is topics like homeschooling, few years ago, that was seen as a pariah. Polling said, oh, it's a bad thing. Only those crazy Christians do that. Homeschooling after the pandemic, people look at as a good option, a credible option. Things that were not thought possible before are happening. 40% of parents with kids in public schools say they're open to considering another type of schooling. Now, they're not going to switch. And by the way, many who have switched say they might switch back. But the fact that people are now openly considering options in education, huge change.
Scott, you're one of the few people that can take the 30,000-foot view here. America is allegedly in the grip of a populist revolt. I don't think it's actually populism like William Jennings Bryan populism. I think it's anti-elitism and, more importantly, anti-DCism. Am I right?
You are partially right. There is a class, an elite class, that is way out of touch with the rest of the country. Among people with a postgraduate degree, Joe Biden's job approval is 60%.
Wow.
We've heard a lot over the years about the gap between people with a college degree and those without. The real gap is between people with a college degree and those with a postgraduate degree. So there is that form of elitism, and there is a rejection of that. There is a little bit of an attitude, not William Jennings Bryan, but we need the government to do more positive things for working class Americans. That is a part of the attitude that is there.
Now, I have a piece in the Washington Post today, and confirmation bias is not at work here because I have no idea whether or not Scott's going to agree with me. Brett Stevens wrote an essay in the New York Times last week saying I was wrong. Trump voters were angry. I said, no, Brett, they weren't angry. They were rational. They wanted the Supreme Court to change. They wanted taxes lower. They wanted China taken on. And I don't think the 1-6 committee has done anything of significance. They may have moved a few marginal votes. The Trump haters are still Trump haters. The Trump lovers are still Trump lovers. And the people in the middle are still waiting and seeing. Am I right?
Mostly. Look, the 1-6 commission, if I ask about importance of issues, it's way near. If I have 10 issues, it's going to be number 10. It's just not catching anybody's attention. And people are as likely to trust Republicans on handling that as Democrats, again, because of the partisan bias. So that's not moving anything at all. When you talk about the rational Trump voters, absolutely. In 2016, that list of Supreme Court justices was critical. 87% of evangelical voters voted for Trump. Why? To be honest, they didn't know if he'd keep his promise. But they knew that Hillary Clinton would nominate somebody who they would oppose to the Supreme Court, who would not be supportive of religious liberty. So it was a rational choice.
Now, Scott Rasmussen, Trafalgar is the new Rasmussen Reports. Back when you ran Rasmussen Reports, people checked in with you to find out what was going on in a state race because you got rid of as much bias as possible. Now they look at Trafalgar. I think they're all broken. Brett Baer and I talk about this all the time. I don't even know why we put them in the news reports because some of them are so bad. So how do you do it? I mean, technically, how do you get to what the people think now that they don't answer their phones, spam calls? They just don't answer their phones.
It is far more difficult. I long for the good old days when we thought that, I'm drawing a blank of the term, when people started putting
margin of error.
No. When people started putting to voicemail to
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Like they wouldn't answer their phone. They'd screen their calls.
Yeah. But
now what we end up with is a much more challenging situation. So I do very few calls, very few interviews. Via phone. Because, look, if I were to call my kids on a cell phone, the first thing they would say is Mom okay? Because nobody talks that way anymore. We reach people, we text people. We find some segments of the population, mostly people in rural areas who are older, still respond to emails. We reach people through apps. When you open an app, you might be invited to take one of our surveys. And if you do that, and you're not really careful, you'll end up with a sample that has too many people in urban areas, too many people with higher levels of education. So you really have to make an effort to reach up. Just under a quarter of the population live in zip codes with less than 250 people per square mile. You have to reach those people. And it takes a lot of work.
Well, tell me about that, because obviously the cost of reaching those people is higher than it was 20 years ago. Who's willing to pay for that? I don't think the news organizations are. In fact, I always remind people, a week before the 2020 election, my employer, The Washington Post, teamed up with ABC, They put out a poll showing that Joe Biden was going to win Wisconsin by 17 points. He won by 0.6. Just my exhibit A, and I leave it. I stop. I just stop. It's broken. It well, takes me,
actually,
more money.
I want to challenge you a little bit on that.
Please.
The worst polls in the 2020 election were those that used what used to be called the gold standard. Operators calling people and talking in person. Why were they? Well, because people don't talk like that anymore. That system is gone. That method of doing polls is not worthy of being continued. And I will also say that the new methods are still in the development phase. We're better than we were a couple of years ago. We'll be better in 2024 than we were in 2020. But the phone polling system, I just discounted entirely.
Well, the Real Clear Politics average of polls I used to believe in, but if it's garbage in, it's garbage out. If you average 10 bad polls, you get a bad average. That's all it is now. So when we hear President Biden's has hit approval ratings as low as any modern president and dropping, do you believe that?
Yes. I believe that not just because of one poll or the trends or the Real Clear Politics average, but because if you begin to look at the dynamics of what's happening in every administration, when there's a Democrat in office, fewer people become or identify as Democrats. More people identify as Republicans. And by the way, when a Republican's office, the reverse happens. What we're beginning to see among Democrats is a tremendous softening in support for the president. They're not disapproving, but
skeptical.
We also see among black voters, his numbers have fallen significantly, especially among young black voters. Now, look, I didn't poll in the Harry Truman era. I didn't poll in Dwight Eisenhower's era, but they were very popular. So, you know, there's nothing really other than 21st century comparison.
But I don't know if you're old enough to remember interest rates, a mortgage at 12.5%, which is what my first mortgage was.
Mine, too.
And 17% inflation and unemployment, you know, the misery index.
Right.
It seems to me that most Americans aren't familiar with inflation and what it does to people. Are they learning the hard way?
Absolutely. Look, inflation as a theory, I talked to Steve Moore a lot about this. He wants people to understand what causes inflation. No, we don't have to explain that to them. They see it every time they fill up their gas tank. You know, at least half of America lives paycheck to paycheck. So when they put $30 more in the gas tank or $40 more in the gas tank, and then they go to the grocery store with less money, the prices are higher there, they feel it. The group that is not feeling it are the people that
the
are
elites.
Doing very well.
Yeah. Right. Kevin McCarthy was on with Larry Kudlow yesterday, and he said 9% inflation means that one of your 12 paychecks is gone.
Yeah.
And that was a heck of a way to frame it. Had you heard framing like that before?
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. So what do people fear the most right now? Are they afraid of it accelerating? Are they afraid of education breaking down? Are they afraid of China? What do they fear?
They're fearing the incompetence of our leadership. And by that, I don't mean just the Biden administration. They're looking at a political class all across the country, and they're worried. Yes, people fear China. Most believe that the pandemic was caused by a lab leak. And most believe that our government not only helped fund it, but that it helped cover it up.
Assume for a moment that President Trump does not run for the nomination, which will introduce a peculiar dynamic that we haven't ever seen in my lifetime of a Grover Cleveland kind of thing. Who's got the right appeal not named DeSantis? Does anyone not named DeSantis have the right mix?
We won't know that until the campaign trail really heats up. But what will happen if President Trump does not run for reelection, DeSantis will become the de facto front runner. And if I was on his team, I would be worried that he's peaked too soon because everybody will be taking pot shots at him. And what will happen during that time is somebody will emerge to be the I'm not DeSantis.
You know, Ted Cruz argues the Republicans always nominate the person who came in second the last time.
Yeah, well, and we also thought that Hillary Clinton was going to beat Barack Obama.
Hillary Clinton was going to crush Donald Trump.
Right. We had that one-on-one dynamic. Things change.
Scott Rasmussen, it's great to see you again. Go cheer him up.
Go cheer him up.
Alec at the American Legislative Exchange Council.org. Go to alec.org for rich states, poor states.
three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.